Blog Talk Radio.
Forever Blue Shirts Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Forever Blue Shirts Radio. I'm your host, Russell Hartman, and joining me this week is my good friend and pal, as well as staff writer for Forever Blue Shirts, Mr. Kevin Kruby. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. You introduced me like I'm never on the show anymore. I feel, you know, a little weird about
it. I always like giving everyone a nice intro.
Oh, it's a nice intro. I think everyone deserves that. A nice back rub, too.
So before we jump into everything, I'd like everyone to know our special guest today is Mr. Steve Cornianos. As most of you know him as the draft analyst. He's going to be on with us for almost the entire show, talking prospects, talking draft. Yes, we're going to talk about Kaapo Kakko, of course. We're also going to discuss who the Rangers should pick at 20th, if they might make a trade to move up, and just how much their pipeline has improved over the past year. Since, well, I guess more a little more than the year. Since
a year and a couple months.
Yeah. So before we get into the Rangers, I think it's important to talk about the Stanley Cup Final. Last night, the St. Louis Blues took a 3-2 lead in the best-of-seven series. They won in TD Garden by a score of 2-1. And the play that everyone's talking about, Noel Achari gets tripped.
Yeah, by Tyler Bozak.
And the Blues end up scoring immediately after to take a 2-0 lead in the game. So the big thing on Twitter today, the big thing I'm seeing is, you know, the officiating has just been terrible throughout these playoffs.
Well, there's no doubt about that. You can even recall, like, a similar play that, even though the whistle blew, Brad Marchand punched, I think it was against, who was the Canes, or was it the series before them?
Oh, you know, I forget exactly. But I think it might have been the Blue Jackets.
It might have been the Blue Jackets, and, like, you know, just it wasn't even a sucker punch. It was just blatantly just beating on a guy that wasn't, I guess it is a sucker. That's the definition of a sucker punch. He sucker punched him in the back. And it's just like, you know, now the Bruce Cassidy's calling like, oh, you know, these calls have been horrendous, this and that. We're not getting the power plays we used to get. It's just, you can't complain about this. You guys get away with everything. Brad Marchand literally licks people for a living, and you're going to complain that you're not getting a slew foot in the Stanley Cup Finals? Everybody knows that the rule books are out in overtime, especially in the playoffs, and especially in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You can make a comparison for anything, any sport, anywhere. But once you get to the finals of the Stanley Cup playoffs, there's no rules. Like that was pretty blatant. Don't get me wrong. I'd be pretty mad if I was a Bruins fan too. But you have to just expect it.
The rules kind of getting very strangely interpreted, I feel like. But that's been the whole playoffs. I mean, you know, people have been saying about the Golden Knights, how they got screwed in Game 7 against the San Jose Sharks with that call. You know, it's Brad Marchand hitting a guy in the back of the head. You know, it's been a lot of things these playoffs. And, you know, this is just another thing in a long line of, you know, Bruce Cassidy, I believe, put it last night at his press conference. Bruce Cassidy is the head coach of the Boston Bruins. He was saying that this kind of looks like a black eye on the league right now. And
well,
I mean,
the league has a lot of problems with it. I mean, like, we can sugarcoat the league all we want. We could be happy that, you know, they're adding new teams and doing all this great stuff in the Winter Classic and the Stadium Series. But the bottom line is the NHL is a flawed sports system, I guess, is what you want to call it. It's just, it's hard.
It's hard to make the right calls in crunch time. Yeah, I agree.
It's different if it was a small play, like, you know, the ref didn't see it, but it was right in front of
his face. No, but this was a Stanley Cup final
game
winning goal.
But he's right in front of his face. And now St. Louis goes back, game up, back to home ice.
With a chance to win their first cup in franchise history.
I think the last time they were in the playoffs was against the Bruins anyway.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. I've seen on Twitter today, Peele posting, especially, thought a funny tweet was from Sarah Sivian, who writes for The Athletic. She covers the Carolina Hurricanes. She's originally from Boston, and one of the tweets she put out today was, It said, so we're all cool with bad officiating as long as it's against the Boston Bruins. Is that what, is that the vibe I'm getting? And a lot of people underneath that tweet were like,
yeah,
I guess that's okay. And you know what?
It's like the maps that they have. You know, like the maps
here's
who's rooting for the Bruins, and then everybody else rooting for the Blues. You saw it every series before this.
And you know,
do it with the Patriots, too.
I'll say this. Look, the Boston Bruins, obviously, a lot of people do not like the Boston Bruins. I'm not saying what happened to them was right. I think they honestly did get screwed out of that game last night. But I'll say this. They don't really have my sympathies. And I know a lot of people might go, oh, no, you shouldn't have a feeling. Like that. Well, you know what? When your star player punches someone in the back of the head these playoffs, basically gets away with the whole thing. With
their karma comes back.
Yeah, like
really
licking people. Like, the antics are really
it's
getting.
It's not like the refs are like, don't have social media.
Yeah,
like,
the
they know who they're
the antics are
with.
Getting ridiculous. I honestly, I don't know what to say about Brad. Like, I don't know what to say about the Bruins. They don't have my sympathies. You know,
it's not like they played well anyway. They didn't do well on their power plays the first two periods.
Like you
the
said,
the third period they came alive a little bit, but it's just too little, too late. Even without this goal, the Blues hit two posts. Rask made an incredible save in the first.
Yeah.
It was the first period. It's just, you know, like, the Blues played better. They deserved to win the hockey game, and even without this play. You know, the Bruins should still be mad at themselves. It doesn't help that Chara is basically
I feel for Zdeno Chara. That's tough to play through that, but at the same time,
Derek Stepan scored two goals with a broken jaw, so
did.
I don't know what Chara's excuse is.
But you know, point being, the officiating probably is something that desperately needs to be looked at
this
season.
Is something that you know
you need to take a look at the rule book. You need to start calling things like they're meant to be called. Because it's starting to cost people series, games, it's troublesome.
Yeah.
You know, we can joke, you know, it's against the Bruins, who cares? But if it was your team, you'd be very upset.
Exactly.
And if it was the Rangers, we'd be very upset.
Yeah, we'd be yelling right now about, like, how crappy this whole situation is. It's like, oh, the refs aren't on them. You know, you can make the same comparison to Henrik Lundqvist getting bodied before letting in the game-winning goal.
Absolutely.
You can make that same exact comparison, and it's a completely different situation because we're on the losing side.
Absolutely. And, you know, people I talk to now still remember the Dwight King goal. You remember how he just buried himself in Henrik Lundqvist, basically tackled him, and then Henrik Lundqvist got scored on.
That changed the whole series.
And
right
you have to remember, too, the Jake Muzzin knee-on-knee hit on Zuccarello that
Zuccarello
somehow got called for. I mean,
yeah, now, I don't know how that's possible.
That series against the Kings
was
some of the worst officiating I've possibly ever seen.
It's just it's a common theme now. It's just bad officiating in the finals. I mean, if we keep seeing this, it's not like Gary Bettman's going to step in and be like, okay, we need new officials.
No, but something desperately needs. Even if you have a summit or you talk to officials,
it's hard to make a challenge off of that. It's hard to make some sort of tangible thing. So, like, you know, the refs are accountable. It's just the worst part about this is these are supposed to be the best referees in the game, and they're making crappy calls like this. It doesn't bode well for the NHL.
No, it does not bode well for the NHL. I mean, look, if this is how we're gonna start. If this is, or if you're saying this is now the standard, that's not a good.
It's not a good standard.
You really need to take a look.
Better officiating. It's just. Look, I mean, I'm sure the refs are also tired. They have to skate with them. I'm not trying to sympathize with the refs. It's just like they're human also. But
you can't
make
these kinds of egregious
mistakes. It's a little bit like, oh, you missed a cross check or you missed a high stick here or there. You missed someone fall flat on his ass. I think he's in concussion protocol now, which is crazy. It's just
it's troublesome to me because of what this is kind of saying for the playoffs going forward. I mean, I understand little mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can understand that. But when it comes down to it, you really need to learn that things like this. Look, it was blatant. It wasn't that it was behind the play.
No.
I mean, this guy got tripped right there.
Yeah. And
right
it's not like
there.
With the stick. Tyler Bozak kept his leg out. He could have easily moved his leg and then gave up on the play a little bit to avoid a penalty. I mean, like any other situation, he would have gotten called. But just for some reason, it's either the ref, you know, has some personal vendetta that he wants to, you know, get back at them. It's like he probably didn't think it was going to end up being a goal.
Oh,
this way. It won't be getting the attention it did now if it wasn't a goal, and it wouldn't be getting the attention now if it wasn't the game-winning goal. So it's just – it's all about, like, you know, the situation, you know, I don't know. It's just bad. The refs are just bad.
Yeah.
It comes down to that. We always complain about the officiating – every time we review a game afterwards.
Absolutely.
Even if it's on our side, we can still see it's like, wow, we really shouldn't have gotten that power play that led to this goal. Wow, we really shouldn't be, you know, 5-on-3. Or it's like, oh, where's the cross check for that? Or where's the high stick? He's bleeding, this and that.
Now, another topic I'd like to discuss before Steve joins us. An article came out today, Larry Brooks from the Post. I know a lot of us feel different ways about Brooksy.
Oh, Brooksy!
But Brooksy's piece today was about John Davidson and about how John Davidson is also focusing on revamping the Hartford Wolfpack.
That's an important aspect. I feel like a lot of people do discredit the AHL, just like with any affiliate team, you know, in a lower league. They don't realize that you need a good team around there to help these guys transition to the NHL better, especially defensemen.
You need a winning culture, and it starts with your AHL farm system. You look at the best teams in the league now, the Syracuse Crunch, Toronto Marlies, the Charlotte Checkers. I mean, all of these kinds of teams, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes are just, if they need a guy, they call him up from Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
The Maple Leafs, they need to fill a spot, you call them up from the Marlies. Tampa, they keep calling these guys up from Syracuse.
This goes down to the fact that all of these franchises have a significant amount of draft picks prior. They were rebuilding teams. I don't know as much as the Tampa Bay Lightning in recent years,
mm-hmm.
but Toronto and Carolina especially, these guys, you know, they got better picks. They got better players back when they sold at the deadline. And, you know, that's why they have a good AHL team. But it goes back down, like, who are your coaches? What veterans are on the team to help guide these younger players? Because if you can't just have an AHL team of 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds.
Oh, no, you can't. You have to have some AHL veterans.
A lot of people might think that. But, you know, like you have Mapolesky down there. You know, you have to make AHL signings. And then, let's say, worst-case scenario, like one of your fourth-line guys or third-line guys goes down. And then you can bring the guy up if there's no contract, you know, issue.
Something important to point out is in the article that Brooksy released today, Davidson talks about how you need to have guys like Mark Letestu.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys, a little older guys, they kind of know what their career's at. Guys that are willing to help out the young kids, trying to establish that culture. I mean, there's a reason we haven't seen a head coach in Hartford named yet. There's a reason that a lot of things about Hartford are kind of up in the air right now because they're really focusing on making Hartford a pipeline and not a place where prospects kind of go to shrivel up.
Yeah.
You want to instill this culture down there where the management down there from the coaches, the player, everything, they feel like they are on part of this organization. They are fueling the big club.
Mm-hmm.
And an important point I want to point out as well, Stephen Vogel, who a lot of you know as Stapaway Steven on Twitter, he pointed out to a bunch of us today in our chat that a good thing might be just to rebrand the Hartford Wolfpack. And, you know, he elaborated on that in saying that, you know, if you look at the jerseys of the Syracuse Crunch, you look at the jerseys of the Carolina's farm team, you look at the jerseys of the Marlies, they all look and have the same kind of color scheme the big clubs do.
Mm-hmm.
It helps establish this bond that I think the Rangers really need to start focusing on. And, you know, even if you don't change the name, or even if you do want to do something as radical as changing
the name.
Well,
we saw, you know, what happened with the
Connecticut
Whale.
Yeah. But, I mean, give them the red, white, and the blue.
Yeah.
Give them the colors that
it's
we have.
It's still a little offset, but you're right. It's a little bit the little things that go a long
mm-hmm.
way. And going back to your comment about, you know, these younger guys need to have a winning culture. You know, you throw Elias Anderson down there for a good example. This guy has been up and down between the minors. You know, a lot of people are getting impatient with his play. Let's be realistic. He's not even 21 yet. So he needs to get some consistent playing time, whether it's in the AHL or the NHL. But if you have a bad team, like I think they're on the bottom of the standings also, the Hartford Wolfpack. I think they might've been last in their division. So you can't have a losing culture and then expect, like, oh, the rebuild's going great, guys. It's like, no, it starts from the bottom going up. If your NHL team is doing great and your AHL team is doing bad, that means if anybody gets hurt, you're screwed. That means there's no players that can fill your spot and do just as well of a job that your NHL players are doing.
Yeah, and, you know, this all kind of ties together.
Yeah.
You know, you're rebuilding this franchise. You realize that the Rangers were not where they need to be. And you know what? Even taking a deeper look, like we're doing now, the AHL is not where it needs to be. The NHL is not where it needs to be. There's so many factors into this rebuild. You know, people are calling it a rebuild on a fly rebuild, but it's not now. It's clear based
it's
on
a
this
full
season.
Rebuild.
We're going on full. And you know what? You need some veterans. So people say, oh, you know, the Kreider's still around. Zibanejad's still around. But, you know, Shattenkirk's around. But you need some veterans on your team as
yeah.
well. You can't just
you can't,
toss out a team
you,
of 18, 19, 20.
Oilers.
No, you can't.
You can't be.
So
and
they're doing things the right
on.
Way. They're trading the right guys. They're getting value back. I mean, look, if we want to even go back to last year,
mm-hmm.
you want to talk about Rick Nash. That was a coup. That trade, you know, you get Ryan Lindgren, who
mm-hmm.
hopefully he can turn into something. You get a first rounder. You know, you have a contract in Mapolesky, which looks like they might, you know.
Yeah.
honestly, at this point.
Was Rob O'Gara part of that trade?
Rob O'Gara was part of that trade. And a guy like Pulaski, you know, you keep him down in the AHL. Let him nurture some of these. Let him be a veteran presence down there.
It's not like these other teams don't have these veterans that want to try to get back into the NHL. These guys are doing anything. They'll fight these younger guys. They'll throw big hits around. They'll block shots. They'll do all the gritty things that you want a fourth-line player to do. And then when they finally get called up, you don't have to worry about it. But all of these AHL teams have that. And it's lucky that the Rangers have Vasilevskiy for another year. But it's not enough.
So, okay. You've got Jeff Gorton and John Davidson, you know. Mm-hmm. You're in that room with them. What's the first step you would take right now to help out Hartford down there?
I would hire a new coach. I would hire a coach probably. I don't want to go the David. I don't want to go the Quinn route. But, you know, you want somebody with some NHL experience. I'm not saying a head coach from the NHL. They'll probably have some sort of bench job. But maybe a bench coach that wants to get some head coaching experience. I think it starts from that. I think starting, you know, getting a guy that can learn the roster, pick his staff, and, you know, bring everybody together and develop a winning culture in the AHL, like, right off the bat, then that's something good. Then you can work on, like, the small things like rebranding the jerseys, you know, possibly a name change. All of these things that can happen in the next year, but right now you need to establish some sort of consistency, because all this inconsistency, it happens. You call players up, you lose players from your lineup out of nowhere. Then you have to dig down even deeper into Maine. So it's troublesome. It's just you have to have somebody that knows how to deal with new players consistently, and you need to have someone that knows how to bring younger guys together.
Absolutely. So hopefully, you know, all of this leads to Hartford becoming a nice pipeline for us, and not just a place where you just throw some prospects.
It also does help that you're getting better prospects.
Oh, yeah,
it
absolutely.
Does. I mean, that is the bottom line. The better prospects you have, the better players you have, the better team.
Because with all the defensemen that they've been signing and all the, you know, there's even more forward prospects. Hartford's going to have a nice injection of talent this year. The big club will as well, but, you know, Hartford's going to have a nice injection of young talent. Another topic I'd like to discuss before we're joined by Steve is the current rumors that the Rangers' third jersey will feature the Lady Liberty crest in some form. I know a lot of people, myself included, would love to see the return of either the dark blue or the white Lady Liberty jerseys that the Rangers wore from the late 90s into the basically about, I believe, a season or two after the lockout in 05. Mm-hmm. They were fantastic jerseys, fantastic
great
thirds.
Jerseys.
That's always been like probably my favorite.
Well, this is the thing,
yeah.
Like, you know, we see the Stadium Series jerseys and the Winter Classic jerseys, and they're the same crap. It's New York or the Rangers across.
Yeah.
And the only one that was really different was the Shield in their first Winter
which
Classic.
Which was a really cool jersey.
And
that, like, cream,
jersey.
That cream
it's
color.
It's weird, though, because,
yeah.
Like, you wear it and it kind of, like, bounces off.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
but
it's a cool jersey.
It's different. It was great. It was a different color scheme. It was the same color scheme. But the different, like you said, it's an off-brand kind of cream. But, you know, the Lady Liberty was like a huge statement. It was different. It was great. And it tied in with the New York Liberties, the WNBA.
Yeah.
Game,
and
which
also
is, which is cool because they play in the same building. Why not?
And also to remember, like, one of the coolest Ranger jerseys I think any Ranger fan can own is probably like a white Lady Liberty Wayne Gretzky jersey.
Are you trying to say that you have a white?
No, I wish I have a white Liberty jersey, but
yeah.
It's blank right now. I'm still trying to decide what I want on it. But
well,
you could
get somebody older. You could get somebody
yeah,
older,
I mean, look.
Or you could leave it blank because you never know.
Basically, you know, they were like, and I know there's a division of the fan base that hates those jerseys too, which I can never understand. I think those jerseys.
Well,
it's
not like we're talking about it's gonna be their new home jersey. It's an alternate. They're gonna wear one out of five games at home. It's
mm-hmm.
not going to be anything crazy. It's just, it's different. It's a bold move. The Rangers never take any of these bold moves on their own. So
what do you think? Do you think that, that's the return?
I would love if that's the third jersey.
Yeah? Do you think there's any other options that they're looking at?
Well, you showed me something recently, as in like 10 minutes ago. with the
as
same
like
crest from the Winter Classic,
mm-hmm.
which was that it was a different shade of blue. It was a little bit darker. But it was nice. It was a different change of pace. But I know a lot of people don't like this, but I think NHL 19 had, like, these weird jerseys.
Oh, those were bad.
You didn't like that, like, the blown-up crest all over the jersey? I thought that was pretty cool. It was different. You can't just have the same thing
over and
over. It was
different, but those jerseys were not
good. It's original six.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad it's the original six. I'm glad we have all this history.
But those jerseys were not good.
I like those jerseys. Whatever, man. I mean, look right up there. Look right on my wall. There's one different jersey from the rest of them.
It is, and it's the Liberty jersey.
It's literally the Liberty
right.
jersey.
Yeah.
It's just... If they try something new, I'd be happy with it. If it's the same old New York, like with the Heritage jersey.
Although the Heritage jersey is nice.
Nice. It's just,
jersey
it's nice. It's the same. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it, man.
Yeah, I mean, look. We're not going
to
know.
You know who should be on this to talk about it?
Who?
JL.
He should be, right?
Like you had to spring this conversation on.
I mean, that can happen, right?
It could happen in like 2 seconds.
Like right now.
Yeah.
JL,
how
welcome,
you doing,
bud.
Man?
Hey! Oh my gosh! What a coincidence that you just mentioned my name and I just somehow managed to pop up here. Oh my gosh!
JL, you know, for everyone, by the way, John Luke Shapiro, the voice of the intro of Forever Blue Shirts Radio, fantastic writer. Let's give him a round of applause.
Oh yeah! Yeah, way to go, JL.
Oh, geez. Guys,
JL,
stop, please. You're embarrassing
you
me.
You and Mr. Statboy are our Jersey guys in the group. You guys love them. You guys are very stickler about them, but it's great. You guys, you know, you guys know what you want. You know, we're talking about the Liberty jerseys. We're talking about what this possible third jersey is going to look like. When do you think will be a great time to reveal it? And are you on board with this Lady Liberty renaissance that most of Rangers Twitter and a lot of fans seem to be on right now?
Okay, one, yes, I am on the renaissance for Lady Liberty. I honestly think they've been way overdue for it. I have nothing against the Heritage jersey, which I thought was a phenomenal design in its own right. But, I mean, you got to stick with what people liked. And like Kevin said, you know, in his incoherent yelling, that
not incoherent.
Everybody's
a little loud.
Everybody loved the Lady Liberty jersey. I have 2 Lady Liberty jerseys myself. I own a Brendan Shanahan alternate captain Lady Liberty home, and I also own a Bobby Holik jersey. Don't yell at me. And the perfect time, I think, for them to unveil that jersey would honestly be the draft. And I'm sure other people have echoed those sentiments where, you know, now selecting number 2 from TPS Turku, Capo Caco comes on the stage and bam, there's the third jersey. Teams have done that before, so I don't see why they shouldn't do it here. Maybe they surprise us. Who knows? We'll find out. But I think that would be a good time to do it.
With the second overall pick.
Yeah, boom, you reveal your third jersey. Capo Caco comes out with the Lady Liberty crest. I mean, that would be really special.
I think I would die right there. That's it. It's over. No more Rangers for me.
Right. And I mean, and then, you know, like, you know, Caco comes out with that jersey with the number he's going to wear next year. The Rangers, boom, right on the website, start selling them, right?
Poor Boone Evans.
Yeah. Take that, Boo. Yeah. Uh-huh. Boo.
Also, another interesting tidbit from today, regarding Jersey news. Apparently on Cap Friendly, Sean Day's number has been changed from 74 to 85. Is there someone we know that might be coming here next season who wears number 74, JL?
I don't know, but he sounds like a guy who comes from country with accent like this. I want to say his name is Vitali Kratsov. You might want to correct me on that there, Russell and Kevin.
Now, I think it's funny how Cap Friendly has it updated. Maybe it's official. Maybe this is just projecting, but I think personally that these, like, kind of, I guess we'll call them our 2 super prospects.
Yeah.
And Kravtsov and Kako in 2 weeks from now. I think those 2 are ultimately going to walk into that room and they're going to get what number they want.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's also a third super prospect that we don't talk about.
Oh, is there? Who's that? Who might that be?
Adam Fox.
Adam Fox. Yes, Adam Fox.
You got to really think, like, I know we're going to talk about this more with Steve, but how great is it that we really did, like, they still have time to, you know, do all of this. But we can talk about it later. It's just,
absolutely.
It's just, you know, it's great that they really made a turnaround.
And guys, JL, thanks for joining us, buddy. But we will talk
Alrighty.
To you and welcome our guests. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome back to the show. He's a great friend of the show, Mr. Steve Cornianos, the draft analyst. Steve, welcome back. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Sorry I'm a little late. I was having some car issues. So thanks for being patient.
Oh, it's no problem. I hope your car issues get fixed up, man. My check engine lights come on a bunch of times and I ignore it, so I understand.
He ignores it all the time. I'm a little scared getting his car.
This is all my wife. I'm not. I take great care of my car. This is my wife's car.
Oh,
I've had
okay.
To,
oh yeah, your car too. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I keep my stuff's pretty tight. She's had to. I had to jump start her like 3 times in the last like 2 weeks.
Oh man.
So I finally just took care of it myself. So.
Yeah. So, Steve, thanks for coming on. You know more about prospects than almost anyone in the world, man. I mean, so let's just jump right into it. The name every Ranger fan has been hearing since the lottery, the name we're going to hear at number 2 in 2 weeks from tonight. I mean, he's the Finnish superstar. He's going to be on this team soon, Kaapo Kakko. You've seen this kid. You know what he can do. How excited should Ranger fans be that they're legitimately going to get like a homegrown kid with superstar potential coming very, very soon?
Extremely excited. I mean, it's just never happened in the franchise's history. If you want to go all the way back to Brad Park, I mean, but the team wasn't, I guess the coverage for the draft wasn't that extensive back then. It was more just like a bunch of dudes sitting in a smoky room in a hotel in Canada making draft picks. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like anything like it is today, where you have the suspense, the build up, the lottery, the media is involved, the fans are involved, and so really it was an amazing night when it was announced that the Rangers got it. Not really because the fact that they're getting the second overall pick, or it's just more like it's never really happened to the franchise. You got to think about it. Outside of the Stanley Cup in '94, a couple of deep playoff runs. Like, what's really been exciting about being a Ranger fan for the last 80 something years? And so I think you got to put it up there with all the significant events, because whether they get Kako or Hughes, and we still don't know, because the draft is, this particular draft is pretty unpredictable. It could be a franchise defining moment. You know, they've done a really great job of stockpiling prospects and draft picks and kind of doing this rebuild. And listen, I think all of us during the season, at least I was late in the season, where I'm rooting for them to lose, so we can get the sixth pick or the fifth pick or something. Everything changed on that night with the draft lottery. So if you're a Ranger fan right now, whether you're a self-loathing Ranger fan like I am, or you're an optimist, you got to be pretty excited about what's going to happen on draft day in June in Vancouver.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, ever since we saw that, you know, the Rangers moving up, we've all been flipping out about this kid. What makes Kako, in your opinion, I guess we'll go over Hughes too, but I mean, it's most likely going to be Kako based on what everyone's been hearing, I suppose. But what makes Kako this can't-miss guy? In your opinion, you know, you've seen him so much. What is it about this kid? Is it his skills? Is it his size? What is the big thing that stands out about him above, you know, the rest of the prospects in the draft?
It's his puck control. It's his puck control. There's a lot of stuff when you're watching players, whether they're teenagers or the pros. You look at their shot, you look at their skating, you look at their passing, their vision, their hockey sense, whatever. To me, I don't think I've ever seen Auston Matthews. They're pretty similar in that regard when it comes to the puck control inside the offensive zone. And the reason why that's important, we could go on and why it's important, but the most important thing to me is that it wears down a defense. It wears you out. So if Kako's controlling the puck along the wall or in the corner or behind the net, and it's, let's say 3-4 minutes into a game, he's literally sending a message to the opposing team that, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I could do whatever I want. I could pivot. I could cut back. I could spin. I could, take a quick step. And you're not going to knock me off my feet, and you're not going to get the puck. And so once he does that, it really – you could just tell when you watch the opponents that he plays against. This is an 18-year-old kid we're talking about, playing against grown men in Finland and later on in the World Championships. They had no answer for him. With Jack Hughes, and I love Jack Hughes, and he's my number one ranked prospect, but at this stage where he's at right now, Jack Hughes is going to try a 1-on-4. He's going to go maybe, if you trap him, maybe you double team him up against the wall. You can knock him off his feet. Kako did it with ease at the World Championships. So there's a couple of things that he needs to work on, Hughes, that is. Whereas Kako, there's nothing he really needs to work on. I've never seen an elite draft prospect, and I'll even go one step further, even with Rasmus Dahlin. He had a ton of problems defensively with Frölunda. Turnovers, playing timid. Canada in the World Junior Championships, they were hitting Dahlin hard, and it was impacting the way he was moving the puck. And you kind of saw that in Buffalo this year. Yeah, obviously he's going to be a superstar one day, but with Kako, you don't see any of these problems. You don't see him overhandle the puck. You don't see him puck hog. You don't see him make bad decisions with the puck, take low percentage shots, be out of position, not pay attention to the defensive zone. All those things that people like to harp on when they're talking about a special talent, because there's always a small group of people who are like, well, he can't play defense, and like it really matters in this day and age.
How often do you really see Alex Ovechkin do that? Yeah, it's true. I mean, You're getting this kid Rizzo.
I'll be honest with you. When I first started, I guess, evaluating prospects, doing it at least lately, I did it before, but the last couple of years, in the beginning, I used to care. I used to care about how well an offensive forward cared about defense, and so that would impact how I would assess them. And then after about a year, I realized it's pretty stupid, because if you look at all the top plays in the NHL, yeah, you got your Patrice Bergerons and your Jonathan Taveses who spend a particular amount of time in the defensive zone. If you want to look at it from a Sidney Crosby standpoint, where he's more of a smart player that helps him defensively, not necessarily like he's a good checker, but he makes the right reads, intercepts passes, back checks, things like that. With Kako, even if he was a bad defensively, if he didn't care, what he does in the offensive zone is very unique. So in that regard, if he does go second overall, obviously he's going to play next year. It's without a doubt. I'm curious to see how the Rangers deploy him, because in my opinion, outside of maybe Zibanejad, he's the second best player on the team. Better than Kreider, better than anybody else. I mean, we all know what Kreider is. It's 50-50. Sometimes he disappears and sometimes he's on his game. With Kako, you never get that. So it's like you said in the opening, it's just a very exciting time to be a Ranger fan right now. And it doesn't even matter what they do with the rest of the draft, to be honest with you. You got an A+. You got the home run. You got your franchise players. So for once, Ranger fans could rejoice in that and not, worry about, was this guy going to pan out? Is he going to be good? When's he going to play? Is he coming over? Like, all that stuff is out the window. He's going to be a Ranger on opening night, and he's going to be a superstar for the franchise.
That is going to be so amazing. The fact that we don't have to worry about, an off-board pick for once, mm-hmm. and what are they going to do? I mean, everything we've been hearing, MSG Networks, people at scouts, everybody, analysts, this guy is the guy. This guy is the guy.
It really is a different feel to this year than it really has been in a lot of years. Like you said, Steve, some of the things more memorable, all the playoff runs that the Rangers had, and, how is this going to affect us in the future after trading like all of these guys? But now it's a completely different feel looking in. It's like just, we have hope for the future more than anything else. It's not like, oh, here we go into the playoffs once again. Let's hope we get past the first round this time. But, if the Rangers don't get Kako, if they really – like, if the Devils really, turn everybody's heads and take Kako, would Jack Hughes really be playing, second-line minutes, or would he really, start in the third line?
I would play him on the second line right away, absolutely. I mean, Jack Hughes, he's been scrutinized a lot more than Kako has been. It comes from different areas. I understand why fans and followers from Finland are very, anti-Hughes, because there's never been a Finnish player picked number one overall, and they kind of want that feather in their cap. But at the same time, Hughes has shown he has some things to work on, but they're so small, and they eventually do get fixed. It's not like when you have an elite talent who's a student of the game. The thing about Hughes that people need to remember, if they're going to knock him, I know Devils fans right now talking smack about Kako, and Ranger fans are talking smack about Hughes. But in the event that it flip-flops and the Devils do take Kako and the Rangers take Hughes, you're looking at arguably the best playmaking center that we've had in the drafts outside of Connor McDavid. I mean, you're talking about in the last, let's say, 7-8 years. You're talking about he's a little bit different than McKinnon, obviously, because of the size. But he has all parts of their games. He has bits of McDavid. He has bits of Crosby. He has bits of McKinnon. He has got a lot of Patrick Kane in his game as well. So, Pat Kane, when he was a rookie back in 07, 08, he weighed the same as Hughes did. I mean, he was a winger, but he weighed the same, about 5'10", 5'11", 170. And the kid won the Calder. And Patrick Kane won the Calder, and he was a dominant playoff performer for the Hawks. So I'm not too worried about Hughes fitting in. People talking about move him to wing or put him in the AHL. Like, what are you, nuts? He's a second overall pick. They're not going to put him in the AHL. I mean, if they're not going to put Nolan Patrick or Nico Hischier in the AHL, then why would they put Jack Hughes there? It's silly talk. And if Hughes is the guy obviously I've seen a lot more because, all the times I go to Plymouth and all the times the USHL games that I traveled to see that team play. He's just a special kid. Listen, with all due respect to Kako, I wasn't like, I got to buy a ticket. I got to go see Cabo Cago play. Like, when with Hughes, you have that. It's like almost like a – I'm not going to compare him to Gretzky, but I could say it's when I was a young fan going to the Garden or going to the Coliseum to see Wayne Gretzky play, it was because you want to see Wayne Gretzky play. That was it. And Jack Hughes has that feel already that people go to the arenas to watch this kid play. And I'm sure some people could say, well, they do the same with Cackle, but I think on a different scale. Hughes, with his dynamism, he's excitable with the puck. His hockey sense is really crazy. I mean, the way he has, the sixth sense that he has to sense back pressure, to spin away from it, create time and space. He's going to make a lot of people on the Rangers pretty effective goal scorers, guys that we never would even dream score goals. And then you have to factor in, what if he plays in a line with Kravtsov, who's an elite finisher? So, you saw Cole Caulfield did playing with Hughes, scoring 70 goals, sets the NTDP record, breaks the record previously held by guys like Kessel and Kane and Eichel and whatever. So I'm not going to say that Hughes is a consolation prize because, in a way, he really should be the first overall pick. It's just like I said, it's a really tough call for Ray Shiro and the Devils. Very easy call for Jeff Gordon and the Rangers. That's pretty much it.
I mean, either way, it sounds like Ranger fans are, either way, we're just going to be thrilled. It's a no-lose scenario.
Yeah.
So, all the focus has been on the second overall. I mean, of course, everyone wants Kako. He's an amazing, or Hughes, like we've been saying. But 20th overall is where the Rangers pick next in the first round. This draft, it seems like 3 to 20 could be any order. Even 3 to 25 could go any kind of way, in a way we haven't seen in years at the entry draft. In your opinion, if you could give us maybe three guys at 20th overall who you think would be there, who the Rangers should really look to get with that pick, what are you thinking for 20th overall for Jeff Gordon and John Davidson?
Well, I mean, as mad as I am to say this, for all of the defensemen that this team has drafted and traded for, outside of Adam Fox, maybe Nils Lundqvist, and even on a lesser extent Joey Keane, but he's an overager. How many dynamic defensemen with the puck do they have? And I'm not talking about Tony D'Angelo or Neil Pionk. I'm talking like the next Brian Leetch, the guy that you say, listen, the power play is yours. You are our number one defenseman. We could match you up against the top line. We could, deploy you 25 to 27 minutes a game, just like they did with Leetch. Leetch in the beginning wasn't all that great defensively, but eventually he learned how to play the position quite well. Obviously, he's the last defenseman to have 100 points in a season in the NHL. So, as a fan, that's what I want them to do. I want them to find that replacement. And with all due respect to all these zillions of defensemen that they've accumulated, none of them had that kind of upside. So as much as I hate to say it, if a guy like Ville Heinola or Cam York is there at 20, it literally they're addressing a major void that the organization just has not had. Now, do you need that to win a Stanley Cup? Do you need that to contend? No. They did pretty well with Ryan McDonough as their number one, and he's one of the worst power play quarterbacks I think the team ever had, period. he's not his game. It's not what he does. And so, but when you watch a guy like Cam York or Ville Heinola play, and look at the other defensemen too in that area, whether it be Broberg or Moritz Seider, or Victor Soderstrom, these guys are excellent defensemen in different ways, but they're not when I watch Cam York play, I see a guy who had arguably five of the top eight picks in this year's draft playing in front of him. Five forwards. Hughes, Zegras, Turcotte, Caulfield, and Boldy. And how is a defenseman, if you're going to provide offense, how are you going to provide offense when you have all these dynamic puck movers and puck handlers and shooters and playmakers? And he found a way to make it work. If you watch him play, he's not just an offensive defenseman. He delivers some pretty big hits. He destroyed Pud Colson, who's a tank himself, at the under 18. So I really like Cam York a lot, but I also like Heinola. Heinola's got a little bit of Rasmus Dahlin in him in terms of flair and explosiveness. So I think that it adds that element. You got a free pick. You trade away Kevin Hayes, you got a free pick at 20. Do they need wingers? Well, listen, if they get Kako and you got Kravtsov, you also got Hedl playing wing, and I don't know if they necessarily need to go for a wing, but then again, what's their mentality going to be? Is it going to be best player available? if you look at some of the picks that they've made, clearly they're not going best player available. You know, taking a goalie in a high second round, even though they'll say, well, he was our best player. Well, okay, you know, agree to disagree, I guess. But I really think that there's a chunk of excellent defensemen after Bowen Byram. To me, Bowen Byram is going to be a top five pick. He'll be out of that range. But after Byram, you got about maybe six or seven defensemen that, you know, are going to be number one defensemen in the NHL. Not necessarily superstars, not generational, but they're still going to be superstars, at least, or very good in the NHL, depending on what their surrounding cast is. So that's always an option. Center-wise, you know, you look at Lee Sanderson's development, you look at Filippito's development, you look at Brett Hound's development, very good prospects, but are they dynamic? Are they future number ones? Are they going to be 70 to 80 point type guys? You know, who knows? But at the same time, you got a lot of good centers that are going to be available in that range. Guys like Ryan Suzuki will be there. Connor McMichael's going to be there. Phil Tomasino, another OHL kid. So three OHL kids. The only thing is the Rangers don't really draft out of the OHL all that much, especially forwards. I mean, heck, they don't even draft out of the Canadian Hockey League, period, the last few years, unless it's some type of overage during the late rounds. If you look at their early picks, they've been going USNTDP, they've been going Europe. So they have a lot of options. I would even say if Spencer Knight, the goalie's there at 20, you're talking about a future franchise goalie. I know Ranger fans are saying, what are you, nuts? We got Shesterkin, we got Georgiev, but you got to remember that expansion's coming. And with expansion, you can only protect so many goalies. Henrik is only on the contract for so many years. So it wouldn't bother me as much taking Knight there, because Knight is heralded as the next Carey Price or the next Lundqvist. He's that good. He's not Olaf Lindbom, who was, I guess, a real shot in the dark and way off the board pick compared to the consensus. So the draft is pretty deep with center. If they take Hughes or Kako, and you get that forward requirement out of the way, they could go in a bunch of directions. But personally, I'd like them to get that defenseman. I'd like them to get the type that they haven't had in a long time, and that's either Heinola or Cam York. Those are the two that I'd be targeting.
Now, the Rangers are in a special position. They have a good chunk of draft picks for this season, a little bit more for next season. They have a good chunk of players that they only really have one more year left on their deals. Vlad Domestikov, Chris Kreider, Ryan Strome, to name a few. What's the likelihood, or just like the possibility, that the Rangers trade up? I know there's some teams that are actually in the win now mode. Like, you can even push it to say you could do a mega trade with Colorado for the fourth overall pick if you really think you can go that far. What's the possibility you actually see the Rangers not give up the 20th pick, but give up a later round pick and you know, establish players to move up in the first round?
Well, to be honest with you, listen, the Rangers have traded up before, but when they traded up last year, but it came at a pretty high price, and then they traded away another second rounder to basically get a first round quality pick in Adam Fox. So in that regard, they're not averse to making those deals, so it's always a possibility. To trade into the top 10 is going to be extremely difficult, and I think it's slim to none, the chances that it happens, only because if you look at the teams that are picking 1 through 10, yes, Colorado has that extra pick, but, I mean, why would you trade a fourth overall pick? What could the Rangers possibly offer that they have in their pool to a team like Colorado? And the other thing you have to factor in, too, is the rhetoric coming out of MSG the last, few months is that they might be done with the rebuild. That the fact that they got Kako is the signal to end it, and they have cap space. They feel like they might have a couple of years left of Lundqvist, and worst case scenarios, they could always, resort to Georgiev. There's always a chance that they're going to go all in and keep Kreider and keep Domestikov and keep Buchnevich and just build around them and see what happens, because I think it's very difficult to convince Jim Dolan. Listen, both the teams in the Garden suck. I mean, there's no other way to say it. They've been terrible. Yeah. The Rangers had some pretty good effort under Dave Quinn, and that was refreshing, but they still weren't a good team, whereas the Knicks are just a mess. They're pathetic. So Dolan's got two losing teams. He's got empty seats in April. There's no playoff revenue. He got a brand new building that he refurbished, and now no one's going. Or, you know, he's got some issues in that regard. So I don't know how much longer he could sustain that by trading away roster players to get more futures. You know what I mean? So I think that trading up, although it is a possibility, it would take a lot for them to move into the top 15. It would really take a lot. And I mean, if you look at the roster, like I said, they're a losing team. So losing teams usually have losing players. So like, what if you're a contending team, or even you're a team that there's a losing team like the Rangers themselves? Why would you give up a Trevor Zegras or an Alex Turcotte or a Kirby Dach, you know, for what, like a Chris Kreider and a 35th overall or something like that? So I think it's good to talk about. As fans, we do it all the time. But I think if they do trade up, it might be like 4 or 5 spots, maybe from 20 to 15 or something like that. But I just don't see them going. I don't see any teams moving out of the top 10. I mean, Arizona did it, and I think when they did it with Stephon, I think they might have regretted that move in the long term. But you know, even though they've improved standings wise, but I mean, we'll see. You know, like I said, but you're right. They have a lot of assets. They have a lot of picks, and if you look at the Flyers and learn from their lessons, how you could have a zillion prospects, but at some point you're going to block a lot of kids, and there's going to be no room for them. So you can't just keep stockpiling picks. What's the point? You're going to just create a massive logjam in the prospect pool. So I think the Rangers understand that, and they're all going to move up. I think you'll see them move up into the fifth round. You know, what do they have, 3 sevens this year, or is it 3 sixths? Is that next year?
It's close, where they have like a stranglehold on the seventh round.
It's the three picks next year in the seventh round.
Yeah, so I mean, they could package all three and get like a fifth rounder. You know what I mean? But you know, the fact that they already traded that one high second to get Adam Fox makes me think that if they move up, they'll be aggressive. And you know, if you listen to the insiders and you listen to all the people in the credentialed media, where they say that there's always talk about moving up. You can even watch the draft floor videos, the mic'd up sessions that they play after the draft, where all the teams are trying to move up. And the bottom line is that GM is, for lack of a better term, is scared, because trading away that high pick, you could be trading away a future Hall of Famer or a future All-Star for what? For, you know, a couple of years of a veteran. So we'll see. We'll see. It'll be interesting.
Oh, of course. I mean, I feel like this is one of the most interesting off seasons for the NHL in a long time. There's so many moving parts, so many people with cap space. Rumors of offer sheets have been flying around for months now, so it's going to be a very interesting scene in draft night. So, Steve, you know, before the letter came out, where Jeff Gorton basically explained to the fans, we know we need to improve this team. It's going to be tough, but we're going to get there. The Rangers pipeline has consistently been ranked very, very highly since then. You know, you add Fox, Kravtsov, Miller, Lundqvist, Rykov. I mean, you know, you're going to add Kako this year. You're adding these guys. You know, the Rangers haven't had a prospect list in quite some time like this. You know, in your opinion, how good of a job has Jeff Gorton done since coming out with the letter? I guess even before, you could say, with the, like you referenced the trade with Arizona with Derek Stepan, just how much of a turnaround has this been for a team that consistently was, you know, trying to get that guy in free agency, trying to win that way, and to go from that to what we're in now, to where, you know, you have a great group of prospects. Just, you know, in your opinion, how good of a job has Gorton done since, you know, he's done this turnaround here?
I don't think he's done that great of a job, to be honest with you. He was handed a cup contender, and within a matter of, two seasons, they were out of the playoffs. So if you look at some, there are a lot of good teams out there, Anaheim being one of them, where they're able to make moves and make deals at deadlines to beef up for cup runs and still draft well. And by drafting well, I don't mean just first rounders, by drafting fifth rounders and fourth rounders and third rounders that not only contribute in the, you know, beefing up your prospect pool, but you could earmark them as future contributors. Like, hey, you know, one day Tampa Bay's the same way, where they don't need first round picks all the time. And so people make these excuses. Well, the reason why the Rangers prospect pool was so poor is because they traded away all these first round picks. But if you look at the drafts that they've made, 14, 15, 16, You know, these weren't very good drafts. They passed on a lot of skill in retrospect, guys that might have been able to help them. Because if you – and look, Ranger fans should know this. This is exactly what happened with the Rangers after the Lundqvist era started, where you looked at the drafts that they made in 2003 and 2004 and 2005 and 6 and 7, getting Jesper Fast in the sixth round, getting Carl Hagelin in the sixth round, Artem Anisimov, getting him in the second round. You know, they drafted well. They just did. For, you know, all their first-round picks were hitting for the most part. So I don't think that Gorton and Gordy Clark have done a good job drafting at all, really. I mean, they made some questionable picks. I know some Ranger fans might be more optimistic than I am, but where are the results? You know, prospects score in junior hockey or the AHL all the time, but how is it translating to the NHL level? So, yeah, they wrote the letter, but to me, the letter was their doing. It was their doing. Jeff Gordon's the one that traded away a very high second-round pick to get Brendan Smith. Brendan Smith had one good playoff run, really one good playoff series, you know, paired with Brady Shea, and he gave him a four-year deal with a no-trade clause, and Brendan Smith, you know, they got him playing wing last year. I mean, what a joke. So I don't think he's done a good job, but at the same time, he got lucky. He got – you know, I think he did a good job with the Zibanejad trade. That's one of them. But the bottom line is this. Not only does Jeff Gorton have to contend with the rest of the league, I mean, specifically, there have been teams that have been rebuilding before he started his rebuild. The Devils started their rebuild before the Rangers did. The Flyers started their rebuild several years before the Rangers did. So unless they view themselves as going to eventually leapfrog the Caps and the Pens, who – you know, obviously there are, I guess, aging teams without really good prospect pools or picks in general, so to speak. It's going to be a dogfight for the Rangers to become relevant again. And I think that's why they're talking about, you know, that's why they brought JD in to start enticing veterans to come play for them again and make the Garden packed again. So to answer your question, I'd say his job overall has been, I guess, pretty marginal, like decent at best. I tweeted out during the trade deadline when he made the Zuccarello deal that, you know, an NHL agent, a respected NHL agent, who is one of the sources that I have, he just texted me one thing. He said amateur hour. That's it. That's all he said. So, and there's an agent talking. So, you know, again, I'm not a big Sather guy, not a big Gorton guy, but then again, I do understand that Gorton didn't have necessarily his hands completely free to make moves. Now we're really going to get to see how good of a GM he is, because, you know, Sather for the most part is gone. And you also have to wonder, you know, if he's a little nervous because JD came in, and JD and Jeff Gorton don't have any type of relationship. JD did really well rebuilding St. Louis and rebuilding Columbus, made them into powerhouses. And, you know, the GM and the staff that he had there, they operate a little bit differently the way Jeff Gorton and Sather do. So you have to wonder. I mean, one of my buddies joked with me at the JD press conference, and he said, man, Gorton looks nervous as shit. Because, you know, it could be like, because, well, that's it. Look at the Jets. Look at the Jets. They had the press conference announcing Geese or whatever his name is, and he said all the right things, and they ended up firing the GM because of him. You know what I mean? A few months later.
Yeah.
So I think JD said all the right things, but behind closed doors, he might be saying, hey, you know what? This Gorton guy's got a freaking year. If things don't work out, he's gone. So we'll have to wait and see.
Well, thank God we're not the Jets. So, but don't you think that, you know, we see, like, you know, they drafted Elias, and their kind of mindset was, oh, he's the most NHL-ready prospect, and we saw how that turned out. Now, the last year, we see the Rangers kind of go off board a little bit because Kratsov was ranked pretty high, and then he was kind of on the lower end of the first round. Don't you think that Jeff Gorton is kind of, you know, taking more risks on prospects and not just kind of going the safe route? Do you think we're going to see kind of that this draft, or do you kind of see him going back to that, let's play it safe?
I don't know. It looks like to me like the Rangers don't like a whole lot of finesse, and they don't like a whole lot of skill. Now I love the Kravtsov pick. I tweeted out, even though a lot of people were thinking it was going to be Wahlstrom. I had Kravtsov ranked, I think, 15th, just because the Russian factor was a little bit of a concern. But it was a great pick that they made. Obviously, they did their homework, and they were very secretive about all the trips that they made to Russia to go watch him play until the very end. Some of the picks that they make when it comes to building a culture, building an organization, building a winner, whatever you want to say, some of the players that they've drafted, traditionally, you could get players like that with free agency. You know what I mean? You could get a Brandon Crawley in free agency. You could get, I hate to say this, Elias Anderson in free agency. You know, Pierre Maguire said that he's the next Jesper Fast, and that people freaked out about it. But in a way, like, what has Elias really shown us? And I like the kid. I think he's going to be, you know, if the Rangers do become a cup contender, then if you have Elias on the third line or the fourth line, like a Craig McTavish taking a big draw at the end of a game seven, then yeah, it works out. So it's a home run. But until they get to that point, we just have to, you know, kind of look at them with a little bit of a crooked eye, because it's like, you know, they all say the same. They're not just the Rangers. These are all teams. Every time after every draft, they say the same thing. Oh, we really like this kid. He was higher on the board. Okay, we got it. But look at what just happened with the Red Wings. The 2017 draft, which wasn't a deep draft, by the way, and we all knew it was a weak draft, but five of their 11 picks weren't even signed just 2 years out. Why are you even showing up? Why even pick them then? What does that say you guys, the Red Wings, is evaluated if they don't offer contracts to five draft picks in one draft? Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to me why you'd waste that type of precious asset. Third, fourth, fifth round pick doesn't matter. To me, draft picks are assets. And if you read Jimmy Devolano's book, and if you learn how Neil Smith became Neil Smith and how Jimmy Devolano and Ken Holland built the Red Wings into what they were, they worshipped draft picks. Neil Smith didn't start trading away draft picks until the Rangers were an established cup contender, which was very early into his tenure as GM. So, you know, I'd like to see them have some type of strategy that matches up with the way that the league is trending. Skill, speed, hockey sense, vision, playmaking. You know, they're drafting scout sons, and they're drafting goalies in the second round, and they're drafting overages, big kids that can't skate. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I guess I never will. So for every Kravtsov that they take, they're really throwing away picks. And, maybe I'm being a little bit too critical, but at the same time, look, you got one cup in 80 years. All right, they're a losing team. They're no longer a playoff team. The Henrik Lundqvist years, for all intents and purposes, are over, unless they do something drastic, which is, be active in free agency. Like I said, to me, I don't think moving forward that Gordy Clark and Jeff Gorton are going to be around. I think that JD is going to – he's going to give them a little bit of time, but if give it another year or two, if they don't make the playoffs, remember, too, speaking of the division, remember Carolina is another one. Carolina's got a stacked prospect pool. They got a zillion picks, too, coming up. They got Andrei Svechnikov. They got Sebastian Aho. They're young. They're mobile. They got goalies. They got everything. And they're also in the division, too. So now you got to figure out it seems like the list of teams that are leapfrogging the Rangers is going to grow. So they have to do something. And the good news is that, listen, Kako or Hughes could be that person that puts them over the top. You know, it makes them relevant again, more so than any other player in that pipeline.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot is hinging on whichever one of those two gets picked second overall. And I do have a question from you, from the boss of Forever Blue Shirts. Anthony wanted me to ask you a question. He knew you were coming on. So with Kako, like you said, in the lineup opening night, how do you see this lineup taking shape? If the Rangers do take Kako or Hughes, if you could give me a quick rundown of what your ideal with who they have, maybe include who you'd like them to see at 20 as well. What is your ideal, like, Ranger opening night lineup in October look like?
Well, first of all, the ideal lineup is get rid of everybody on defense. That would be a start. I think the forward group is fine. When you watch the forward, even last year, people want to talk about the inconsistencies. That's fine, but Zibanejad was a dominant player last year. Kreider had one of his best seasons as a Ranger. Buchnevich, when he got his wake-up call, which was, I think, wake-up call 1,000, but he still got another wake-up call, he was excellent. Ryan Strom, listen, they got, I don't know if it's because he got an opportunity and the team was losing and there wasn't a lot of pressure, but he was able to contribute. Nemestikov was able to contribute, you know, but then you got all the rookies. So ideally I would structure a bottom six with mostly kids, throwing a couple of veterans here or there. If you want to keep Fast down there, that's fine. I don't know what their plan is. Are they going to go hard after Panarin? Technically, they could, based on the UFAs available. I mean, they could bring back Zouk if they want. They could maybe outbid. They could outbid Philly for Kevin Hayes, which might be tough. But you know, I get the sense that Dave Quinn is a big fan of Kevin Hayes, and that Kevin Hayes had his best season as a Ranger under Dave Quinn. This is all speculation, by the way. I don't want to, you know, make it like that they're going to bring back the two guys that they traded at the deadline, but I do see them being young again. I see them being young. Brendan Lemieux had a very nice cup of coffee, I guess, as a depth player, and he might have a brighter future maybe as a second liner, hopefully one day, or even a third liner. So I think that they have exciting players in place. I just don't know if what they say is going to happen. If they say that they're going to be active, you know, JD at his press conference said it. We have a lot of cap space, so we're going to be aggressive, I think was the word he used, be aggressive. Well, what does that mean? You know, being aggressive means they're either going to trade away all the dead weight or they're going to sign a lot of free agents. So, you know, we'll have to see that. But if they draft Kako, he could play right wing, he could play left wing, but I think right wing is ideal for him. If that's the case, then you got to figure it's going to be a top line of Zibanejad, Kreider, and Kako, and I think all three of them would really complement each other. If it's Jack Hughes, all right, you get a top line of Buchnevich, Kreider, and Zibanejad, and then after that, you got Jack Hughes, and you need a couple of finishes. Kravtsov, is he going to be there? You got to factor that in. Is he going to stay at wing? What line does he play on? A lot of questions. So I'll tell you without a doubt, though, talking about the forward ranks, get rid of Jimmy Vesey, without a doubt. Unless Jack Hughes can make him a 40-goal scorer, Jimmy Vesey, to me, easily, and I watch a lot of kids play hockey, is one of the lowest IQ players I've ever seen play in a Rangers uniform, and he's a Harvard kid. So obviously it's not book-related or you know, academic-related. For some reason, Jimmy Vesey is one of the worst decision-making players, period, and I'd like to see him go. I just don't think he's a very good player. Maybe, you know, if you knock him down and you put Kravtsov on his wing spot. But if you think about it, if they don't go and make big moves free agent-wise or trade-wise, that defense is really going to hold them back. It's really going to hold them back. Unless they try to do like a Pittsburgh model and just, you know, have superstars all throughout the lineup. How are you going to sustain pressure, and how are you going to move the puck? And like I said, I like Tony DeAngelo a lot. I really do. I even like Neil Pionk for all his warts. He's made some pretty bad decisions. Brady Shea makes a lot of bad decisions too, but he looked pretty good at the World Championships. So maybe you keep Shea, you keep DeAngelo, maybe you keep Pionk, but then again, you're going to be trusting young kids. Who's going to get benched? I think Shattenkirk is terrible. Get rid of him. Stahl is terrible, even though they say he rebounded. A Stahl rebound year last year. He still marked Stahl. I don't think they're going to go anywhere until they fix that defense. But, you know, like I said, at what cost? How are they going to do it? Are they going to buy out contracts? Are they going to have to take on salary to move them, trade away draft picks? You know, a lot of questions. I wish I had the answers, but I don't.
Yeah. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for coming on the show. We always appreciate you having you on here. And I know that just like all of us, you'll be glued to the TV June 21st to see how this crazy first round is going to play out.
No, I'll be there. I'll be there. And if they make a mistake, I'm going to be cursing at him from the rafters.
That's awesome. Steve, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate your time, man. And good luck with your car.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
All right.
I love talking to Steve because the guy's just straightforward.
Yeah, no. He doesn't tiptoe around anything. I think at least 15 times we were looking at each other like, just like, oh, he said what I wanted to ask him. So I was trying to scramble around asking for questions. But yeah, a lot of things, the most interesting thing that he said that kind of took me by surprise was Jeff Gordon has done a terrible job. And yes, if you really do look at it that way, if you look at his whole tenure, he has not done good. He's made bad contract choices. He's made difficult. Like Eric Staal trade was, well, we can talk about that in nauseam, but that's also AV's fault for not playing him on the first line. But, you know, he does have a good point. You know, the Rangers made questionable draft choices, you know, and like you said, with Elias Anderson, it's not going to mean anything. It's going to be a bust if he doesn't pan out, which is the bottom line. If Elias Anderson doesn't pan out, it's a bad pick, which means it was a bad trade that he did. So it's a lot. But, you know, he is straightforward. He says what he's thinking, and, you know, I appreciate it because he does bring a different type of insight into it.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's like I said, like the guy is extremely straightforward. He knows what the Rangers need. He knows they need injections of speed, skill, playmaking. And I agree with him. I hope they do target one of these guys like Broberg, Soderstrom, Seider, York, one of these big, like, not even necessarily big, but just smart defensemen, smart guys.
Defenseman. Someone,
not even just shut them, but smart guys that can get the puck up the ice, guys that can control the play, guys like he's saying, like
Ryan McDonagh type of player,
but with more skill.
Yeah, with
and
more
guys
skill.
That a guy that David Quinn could throw out there and just say, okay, this power play is yours. You have Vitali, you have Kapo, you have Kako, you have Zibanejad, and you have, you know, whoever else you want to put out there. It's your power play. Control it. Get the puck past the goaltender. So I mean, I love talking to the guy, and you know, it's gonna be 2 weeks, people. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks until we find out if it's Cocker or Hughes. We find out what happens at 20. If we find out we move up,
it's a win-win.
But this draft season and this offseason is going to be amazing. Kevin, do you have anything else you'd like to say before we sign off?
Well, I did have a small disagreement with him about the defense. I think we have a lot of players in the pipeline, and adding Fox was a huge jumpstart to that, definitely. But you have Nils Lundqvist. You have Keandre Miller that's coming in a few years. It's just like, do you want to use your 20th overall pick to get that shutdown defenseman, or do you want to bolster that forward group because you might not have some of these guys next year? You might not have Chris Kreider. You might not have Ryan Strom. You might not have a good chunk of your forward core because they're all out for next season. So he makes good points about, you know, they have to leapfrog these other contenders, you know, the Blue Jackets, the Capitals, the Penguins, the Hurricanes, the Islanders, and possibly even the Devils, because, you know, they're revamping also. If they get Jack Hughes, it's over. It's a whole new rivalry all over again. So we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm excited 2 more weeks from today.
It's going to be a very interesting draft day. Everyone, thanks for listening in. You know, as always, we appreciate everyone that listens to this podcast. Please let us know if there's anything you'd like us to change, anything you'd like us to improve, things you'd like to hear, people you'd like to, you know, you'd like us to have
questions
on.
Questions you might want answered, you know,
please,
anything
please,
like
let
that.
Us know. So thank you once again for your listening. We always appreciate our listeners, readers to the site. Please keep going to foreverblueshirts.com. Read the great articles people are putting up, analysis, mock drafts. My mock draft will be up after the Stanley Cup final. Yes, anything Stat Boy Steven puts up, that guy is awesome.
It's like literally every other day. Okay, I got the Stanley Cup.
Anything, you know, John Luke Shapiro, Jordan Goldberg, anything these guys do, you know, these guys do it out of the love for the game, love for the sport, love for the New York Rangers. So please give these guys, you know, read, listen to us on the podcast, and please, like I said, let us know. We will talk to you guys again, most likely after the entry draft, where me and whoever my co-host will be at that time, will be talking to the Hockey News' own prospect guru, Mr. Ryan Kennedy, which is going to be a great episode, and we break down exactly what the New York Rangers did at the entry draft.
Yeah, and thank you again to our boss, Anthony. Without him, this wouldn't be possible, so thank you.
Yeah.
And Big Boss Ant.
Yeah,
and
as always.
Ant,
yeah, and thank
Godfather.
You for making, honestly, yeah, Kevin's right. Ant, thank you for making this all possible, as always. Much love, brother. Have a good week, guys. Have a good 2 weeks, actually. It's almost Kako time, people. Enjoy it.